This podcast is a part of the Blueberry Network. You can find this and other great podcasts at blueberry.com. That's blueberry with no e's .com.
Hi, I'm Dave Dufour.
I'm John Schaup.
And I'm Marcia Fulmer. And we are theater geeks.
Hi, welcome to Theater Geeks, the podcast about community theater and the performing arts. I threw Marcia off there with that dramatic pause.
She,
we're a little punchy. We are doing something of a marathon session, even though we've recorded only two shows this morning, but still been a little bit interesting. We are joined today by Jim Giesel, who is the artistic director for the Acting Ensemble, which is a theater group in South Bend that does some very interesting work and some staged readings as well as full productions. And you are also the playwright, playwright in residence for the Acting Ensemble.
You could say that, although we're expanding it to include more playwrights from the area.
Very good, very good. Well, welcome to Theater Geeks.
Thanks for having me.
One of the areas that we, as a playwright, we were going to talk a little bit about was the whole issue of royalties and things like that. And I don't, yeah. You had a specific issue.
Oh, well, I think it's interesting. Community theaters, we all kind of work on different plans or different styles, but we always want to make sure we pay our royalties. But I think not everybody understands what it means to do a performance necessarily, even a rehearsal could be a performance. So I thought, first of all, I'd ask you about that as a playwright and as a...
The first thing as a playwright is pay your royalties.
Right.
Right. When you do a play, it comes with a list of things that you can and cannot do. And many theaters, now with the internet, it's almost impossible to do, announce a season and not pay your royalties, because they do check on that. But things like what people don't understand is that if you've got a dress rehearsal and you invite people to come to see your dress rehearsal, that's considered a performance and you have to pay a royalty for it. Not even a reduction in the royalty.
Really?
Really.
You have to pay full royalty on that? Oh, wow.
So that's
why senior citizens cost us money.
Yeah, it does.
So that's why it's important that if you have a dress rehearsal, you only have people involved in that production to come to see it. Second of all, if you add performances onto you've got to pay your royalties.
Sure, sure.
And there's that famous case that Tamsin Whitmark did. It was a couple of years ago from a community theater in Pennsylvania where when you fill out your application, you have to put down how many seats you have because that shows how much you're going to have to pay in royalties. For years, they had only been putting down that they only had 300 seats, where in reality, they had 1,300 seats. Tamsin Whitmark went back and sued them
for
every show that they ever did.
Wow.
And they tried to fight it. They tried to say, the theater tried to say, oh, we roped these seats off and everything, and Tamsin Whitmark wasn't buying it. And they finally settled out of court for $50,000. So the theater had to pay $50,000.
Well, you know, I can understand Tamsin Whitmark's point of view because, you know, I can say we roped off 300 or 1,000
exactly.
seats and made them unavailable, but you don't know.
Exactly.
So, you know, if you didn't expect any bigger audience than that, why didn't you just do it in your living room? You know, I mean,
right.
that's... the kind
exactly.
of thing. Yeah, yeah.
I think people don't realize also that the royalty is part of the way that a composer or a librettist or a book writer gets paid for his work.
Right.
You know, and no matter how old it is, I think is it 100 years and they're
it's
in the public domain?
From 1922 on up, it's in the public domain.
Okay.
Which brings a big bone of contention for me with Samuel French is that it's against the law to publish a play that's in public domain and charge royalties for it. What Samuel French has done is they've taken plays that they've copyrighted 1924, 1925, and all their copywriting is the prompt book from the original production. Where the play might be in public domain, they're still charging royalties for the blocking. And how many of us just take the blocking out and do the blocking?
Right,
really?
Right, right.
So I was looking at a production of Brewster's Millions, which is written by an Indiana playwright.
Yeah.
Originally produced in 1909, the original play is in public domain, but Samuel French is still charging a royalty for that, for the blocking, and that kind of irritates.
Can't you just get it out of the library
and
photocopy it?
Yeah, and then just take the blocking out and not do the blocking.
I know that's one of the reasons we like to do Gilbert and Sullivan, because it's in the public domain.
Right.
But I wish that they would explain that to say you can do this, but you can't do the blocking. Where you're being paid for you're charged for the blocking.
Sure.
Dramatist play service, however, now is putting on, this play is in public domain, you can do anything you want to with it. So there's a big difference between Samuel French and
Dramatist.
And even though, I mean, you were talking about Gilbert and Sullivan, but even Gilbert and Sullivan has royalty fees because what they've started doing is that they take that musical and maybe somebody has done an updated version of it.
So then they
purchase that, and then that's what you're getting, and
then
so you're paying the royalty for it.
You need to go back to original source. Make sure you're getting original source material, in other words.
Well, and you know, if you think that these licensing companies don't pay attention, as Jim said, that's totally wrong. Because I can remember years ago, I wrote a review or a story about a high school production at Central High School. And I went on a Thursday night because I was busy on the weekend. And they had senior citizens and a brownie troupe and blah, blah, blah. And the director, because that was in the paper on Friday, the director got a letter from the licensing company saying, we see that you have an other performance that you have not paid for, and she had to pay. And at that point, I had no idea that you had to pay for a dress rehearsal if you had an invited audience.
Mm. Right.
Especially, especially if you're using it for a fundraiser.
Yeah.
Your dress rehearsal for a fundraiser and raising a lot more money in your admission and...
Sure.
Wow.
Well, I mean, there's no reason that they shouldn't be paid for that. But it brings up another issue, too, is that with a play that's not under that's not in the public domain yet, we've heard cases where plays have been taken, say, like a Neil Simon play, and decide to change lines and rearrange things. I mean, as an author, that has got to really grate on you, I would think.
Right.
And tell us why. I think I know why, but you tell us.
Because you spend so much time writing a play of your vision that you think is going to work, and then some director comes along and thinks, oh, I want to cut this or change this. I have that happen. I have an adaptation of Through the Looking Glass that I will now be getting reviews from where they've added the Mad Hatter scene into it, which irritates me because if I wanted the Mad Hatter scene in, I would have put it in with. Or Magnificent Ambersons is another example of a play that I know runs exactly 2 hours. And if I get a review in and it says it runs for 2 hours and 45 minutes, I know that the director has gone back to the book and added scenes that he thought was important to it. So,
right. Well, and I mean, it's kind of what's
That's
funny
really
about that
nerdy.
Is sometimes they'll rewrite something not necessarily well, but they still put your name on it.
Right, yeah.
Yeah. Oh, it's by Jim Giesel. Yeah, boy, he must be a lousy playwright. You know, and that's too bad. That's really bad.
You have to protect the integrity of your work, exactly.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
And you did a podcast a while back about cutting out cuss words and everything.
Yeah.
That you can't even do.
Right.
So don't
even do
the...
Well, you can get permission, though.
Yeah, that's true. You get permission.
Yeah, because we have gotten permission. Because of the audiences that we play to.
Right.
They're more upset by certain words than if you did a whole sex scene on the stage or something.
Yeah, at least you took the initiative to get the permission.
John is very careful.
Good.
Sometimes too careful, but he's extremely careful.
Right.
Well, you have to.
Because I know a theater around here years ago that was literally closed up and gone. It was a summer theater, and it is no more. Because the director did not pay royalties, he'd get a perusal copy and copy it and send it back.
Yeah,
and he got slammed, and it's gone.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they don't fool around where money is concerned.
Well, no, and if they did, if that was possible to do that on a regular basis, then there wouldn't be any more plays coming out of
exactly.
I mean, so it's really not fair to other people.
People think, oh, Richard Rodgers has so much money and everything, but
that's just silly.
That's not
really the point.
Right? Yeah.
And royalties really aren't that bad. Musical royalties are kind of
they can be steep. Yeah.
But
it depends on, again, as you said, it depends on how big your house is.
Right.
That you'd pay more for a 1,700 seat theater than you would for a 250 seat theater.
Right,
right.
You know, so it's all proportionate.
That's right. That's right. So, what's your most recent work? Is it the Amelia piece?
Or no, it's Ship. As far as the acting ensemble,
you've written.
That would have been Infernal Device.
Oh, okay.
Based on Michael Kirkland's novel. It was another take on the Sherlock Holmes.
Oh, okay. Cool. So do you get a lot of your source material, or do you start with an existing story very often? I know Amelia is about Amelia Earhart.
Earhart was already written.
Oh, okay. I thought you did that. Okay.
No, I do a lot of adaptation work. Mm-hmm. So a lot of my things are based. So that's how I knew about public domain, what I could and could not use. Mm-hmm. And but for Michael Kirkland, I approached, you know, he's a novelist, and I made him an offer of X amount of money for so many productions, and he agreed to it. And so we
that's
went
great.
Ahead and did his adapted his novel for the stage. Booth Tarkington, you know, he's some of his work is in public domain, some of it isn't. The two Pulitzers that he won are Alice Adams and Magnuson Amundsen's. Those have fallen into public domain. Uh-huh. So
that's interesting. Were they plays first and then they made movies? Because I just saw Alice Adams with Katharine Hepburn on Turner Classic Movies, my favorite channel.
There was a production of Magnuson Amundsen's in the 20s, and I believe that there was a production of Alice Adams that was written specifically for the Indianapolis Civic Theater.
Wow.
But there was never a Broadway production of Alice Adams. So that's just
amazing.
Waiting to be done again.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It and was, you know the ending of that is completely different.
That's what I heard. Yeah. She doesn't wind up with
no,
the guy.
It ends
Spoiler alert.
Oh, please. That was out when I was like 3 years old or something. You know how old that is. Yeah. No, I read that. Yeah.
Wait a minute. Are you telling us that you're in the public domain now?
I am. I wish someone would domain me, but they don't. Anyway, yeah. we've all had our laugh. Let's
I'm just kidding.
Okay. All right. I'm in the public domain too. Yeah.
So one of the things that we just kind of wanted to talk with you about that, but then just I've always been interested because of where you find your source material. I mean, you seem to write about Indiana, maybe based on Indiana.
Well, I think that's important is to write about what a long time ago when I was at the Indiana rep, I thought, what am I doing here? And we had these discussions about so many of us leave the state and go to New York or go to California, and then you begin writing about that. But if you stay in the state, I think it's important to write about what's important to us in this community. What does it mean to be a Hoosier? What is Hoosierdom? And those were the sort of things that I wanted to explore. Mm-hmm. What makes us different than people who live in Iowa?
And, Jim, it's basketball.
Corn.
No, it's not basketball.
Basketball.
No, it used to be basketball and corn.
Apple pie.
Apple pie. No. No.
I
agree with you. I like that because localized kinds of dramas like that, I think, can very much bring the culture to life a little bit more for people, and I think that's a great thing.
Yeah. And I learned that when we did the Tiernan Affair, of how popular that was.
Really well done.
Oh, thanks.
You know, I mean, it wasn't just that it had a good script, but it was, that production was really sharp. That's the first time, that was the first thing you did
that was the,
when the acting ensemble
reemerged,
right? Yeah, it was really good.
Well, thank you.
Really good.
It was a fun show to do. And again, the response of people from South Bend coming to see that show opened my eyes up that they're very interested in what goes on in their community and the history of their community. Mm-hmm. And so, and that was one of the things that I wanted to keep with the acting ensemble is that we have this program called Hoosier Words, where we explore a variety of things. We're one of the stage readings that's coming up is called Alive and Dead in Indiana. And that's...
which is which?
That's based on a book about characters who have lived in Indiana, like James Dean, Dan Quayle, and
there's a coupling. Good heavens.
Yeah. Dead and alive. That's one. That one's hard to tell.
Cole Porter.
Yeah,
Cole Porter.
Yeah, that would be a good one. Yeah. Cole Porter. Yeah, you forget how many did come from Indiana.
Kurt Vonnegut.
Wow. Yeah.
Jane Pauley.
James Pauley.
I don't know.
She did. Joyce DeWitt. Okay. I'm not sure she would
Gene
be in the play,
Hagen.
Though. Gene Hagen, yeah.
Yeah.
From Elkhart. Yeah.
Oh, is she from Elkhart?
Yeah.
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 Yeah, she was a good actress. If you compare what she did in Singing in the Rain the other stuff,
She is so good.
But
Verhagen. Verhagen, yeah. Jean Verhagen.
Right.
We do know something.
So what's next on your docket then?
Next is Ambrose in Hollywood, which is based on a Carl Van Vechten novel. Carl Van Vechten was a very popular author during the 20s. He's more known for his photography now. But he was sort of the Dorothy Parker set, and it's his take on what movies were like in the 1920s. So that's what's up next.
Okay, now that's going to be where? At St. Mary's?
No, that will be at Century Center. We're now becoming the resident theater company of Century Center for the year. Mm-hmm. So everything will move into Century Center.
Okay,
so.
And where are you going to You're going to use the Bendix?
No, recital hall. We won't go into the Bendix.
No, good.
Simply because of all the things that you
said. It's terrible. It's bad.
It's hard to walk in. Yeah. It's 700 seats. And
it's not comfortable.
And you could just lose your life going down the stairs.
Right.
Exactly. So what are you working on right now is your next script?
That's it, Ambrose and Holly.
You're writing now.
And that's going to be when?
In September.
And
then October we open God of Carnage.
Oh, good Lord.
So you're writing against a deadline is what you're telling me right now. How do you do that often?
Because you've been doing that a lot, though, haven't you, last year?
Just lately.
Yeah.
Usually, not being involved in a theater company, it takes me 3 years to write a play.
Yeah.
So now I've got to, if I'm going to do them, I'm pumping them out. So, but after this, I'm going to slow it down a little bit as far as stuff that I'm doing.
It's a regular Alan Eichborn.
Does that frustrate you? I mean, to be working on a deadline?
Yes, it does.
Because I would think you wouldn't have enough time to tweak.
Yes, and that's the whole problem. Yeah. Well, that was interesting with the Infernal Device thing was I thought that the actors got an experience of what it was, the old Broadway show where you got the script and then you went into rehearsal and you got to cut and you got to move scenes around. And they were all very good with that. They allowed me to do it. Nobody complained because I was moving scenes around and I was cutting as I was going. And a lot of times that's how a play is.
You have to remember what's cut and what's not.
Yeah, and I had to put the dates on the top.
Kind of like a workshop. It's kind of, you know.
Exactly, it is.
We've talked about that, about workshopping more. You know, could we, because at our home theater, we don't really have the time, it seems, in the schedule to necessarily do original pieces. Because we have to weigh things heavily, like will it sell to the audience?
Exactly.
Sometimes if they don't know the name, you can't necessarily guarantee they're going to come to see it. Can our shows play to just a quarter of a house or a half a house and still make money and be able to continue operating the facility. But we've talked about the idea of maybe doing original works and workshop that maybe then only get a one weekend run and maybe not a fully staged run or something like that.
Well, that would be great because then you're giving playwrights more opportunities.
It's like what they do in New Harmony.
Right.
Where you have readings and then they work with the actors and the playwright work together and it's amazing the changes that they can accomplish now, in just a couple of times.
And you're called the acting ensemble. I mean, do you audition an ensemble once a year?
We have not had to audition. Mm-hmm. But
what do you do when somebody comes to you and says, I want to be in one of your plays?
They usually don't.
Why?
I think it's because people know that we have a core group of members and...
Is that like a closed corporation?
You know, oh, no, not kind of. And I think that's what sets us apart from other things is that we don't have to be so fair, if I'm making sense.
You don't have to have open auditions.
No.
We went into it with our eyes open that we would like to try to get the best actors possible. So I will offer an actor a role and say, this is what's coming up. And there are so many good actors now and our shows are so small that we haven't had to do that. But next year we'll hold auditions. We're getting older.
That would be good. At least you could see what's out there that you want to incorporate.
Right. Mm-hmm.
That's great. Right.
Well, you also find yourself writing to the group in some cases, maybe?
No, I'm going to write for possible other productions.
Okay,
so
all right.
It's always geared towards what is... things right now are written for 5 or 6 actors.
Right.
They play for an hour and a half. If you write a play with 20 actors, you're never going to get produced. The economy has killed anything like that. So that's why you're seeing so many new plays with just 4 or 5 actors.
Exactly.
In it. And if it's a broader show, you're seeing a lot of doubling and it being written specifically for that.
Or you're seeing the really big musicals that get the big bucks or something like that, and then that's a different animal completely. Yeah.
Yeah, it is.
Cool.
It is.
Well, we appreciate you being with us today here on Theater Geeks, Jim. We've been talking to Jim Geisel. I said it
they
the wrong
say
way.
20,000 million different
I know.
Ways.
So Jim Geisel, the artistic director for the acting ensemble of South Bend, and also playwright for that group, and well, for other groups as well. Right?
You
do all kinds of things. So that wraps up this episode. Please remember to find us on Stitcher Smart Radio for your Android or iPhone device.
You do something with Blueberry.
Blueberry.com. You can find us there. We are on iTunes and all kinds of other podcatchers. Please be sure to stop by the store, theatergeeks.com/store for all your hats.
Because you're wearing your underwear today, aren't you?
Don't start with that.
Yeah. Your hats, cups, mugs, teddy bears, and something that rhymes with teddy bear is there and available. And also, please go to the Theater Geeks website, theatergeeks.com. Fill out our listener survey if you are a listener, because it helps us to know a little bit more about our market and gives us some ideas about other shows to produce. You can also provide us with ideas for upcoming shows. Please drop us a line, Dave, John, or Marsha, either one of those first names.
Nobody
at theatergeeks.com, and we will be sure to pay attention. That's all for now. I'm Dave Dufour.
I'm John Schaub.
I'm Marsha Fulmer, and we are Theater Geeks.
Music for Theater Geeks was provided by MusicAlley.com.